It is interesting to note in the study of human culture that every culture of every tribe, nation, state, or religion in human history has developed and established a unique, if you will, various days for worship and celebration. It would seem to me that it's a manifestation of an innate urge for religion that God has created within us. And God, I got to do this, it's not in my notes, but God did create us with that. We did not descend from apes or monkeys, although we act like it sometimes. And some of you may act like it sometimes. My granddaughter, I used to, when she was younger, she liked me making the monkey sound. I'll try to replicate that. It won't be as good as it was the first time. But when I would go, like, but much louder. So she likes that. And if she's watching today, she's probably laughing or giggling. But we didn't come from monkeys. We didn't. God created us. And you and I also understand the commands given to us by God on when and how, especially when and how we worship Him. Yet men continue to stubbornly refuse to do that. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 29 and verse 13. Isaiah chapter 29 and verse 13. Wherefore the Lord said, for as much as this people draw near to me with their mouth and with their lips do they honor me, but they have removed their heart from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the precept of men. Wow. But here we also see that God has created within us a desire to worship or have a connection with something greater and bigger than we are. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 15, if you would, please. Matthew 15. Everything okay still? Good? Matthew 15 and verse 9. But in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men. And that is vain. And it's in vain. God simply, please listen, does not accept pagan worship, practices, or teachings from the Bible that are not from the Bible. They're of men. And you're saying, well, thank God we don't have that in the Church of God. Oh, yes, we do. And it's alive and well for those that have ears to listen. But God does not accept that. And yet that is exactly what our culture and society is doing. We mask what is cute, fun, in a party-type atmosphere, but we must look beyond, as we say, the smoke and mirrors. I want to show some pictures at this juncture. Every day for exercise and to keep my blood sugar numbers lower as possible. So I took several pictures. We're only going to just show a couple, three. But you can see the size of this skeleton. It's been there for about 2.5-3 weeks. And ironically, I watched the father with his little about 5-year-old daughter putting it up. She was there helping him. I also like to visit stores for daily needs in life. This next picture, okay, this is one. This was going to the entrance of someone's home, okay, that they put up for this time of year. And this is a picture, I won't say what department store it is. I will tell you, I walked a little bit further and this thing went, and screeched and fell off the counter and stopped. And I almost wet myself. It scared me. But this is what has been out for about a month or more. 6 weeks in many of the stores. And I took a lot more pictures of all kinds of things. Well, I also want to read to you where the subdivision of where I live, what they sent out last night. I'm going to read it word for word. The title is, Where I Live, Witches Ride. Calling all residents. Oh, excuse me. I don't want to tell everybody where I live, but calling all residents witches. Join us for the 6th annual Witches Ride on Saturday, October 25th. Schedule. At 3:15 p.m., witches line up at the Recreation Center. At 3:30, parade travels down to the boulevard, circles back to the Recreation Center. Stick around after the ride for family fun featuring live music, a bounce house for the kids, and a slice of fire food truck. Registration is $10 per witch. All proceeds help fund this magical community event. Bring candy to toss, wear your witch's hat, ride your bicycle, golf cart, or walk with your friendly witches. Let's make this year's witch's ride the spookiest and most spirited yet. End of quote. All right. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 12. Deuteronomy chapter 12. And if you're thinking, oh, that's no big deal, that's all fun and cute, please listen today. And Gil, how about, do we have all the connections back?
15 right now.
Okay, about half. I'm sorry. This will be recorded. I can't control technology. When it decides to go do its thing, it does. So Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 29. When the Lord your God shall cut off the nations from before you, where you go to possess them, and you succeed them and dwell in their land, take heed. You can't see my Bible, but if you could, there's a big, giant, red warning. Take heed to yourself that you not be snared by following them. After that, they be destroyed before you, and that you inquire not after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? Even so, we will do likewise. You shall not do so unto the Lord your God, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates, have they done unto their gods, for even their sons and their daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods. What things soever I command you, observe to do it. You shall not add to it, nor diminish from it. So if we think for a moment about our culture, folks, and a good portion of our society would still claim to be Christian, yet virtually every religious observance of every Protestant or Christian faith, do you know what it's based upon? Pagan customs and heathen practices that were adapted and adopted and adapted in an attempt to worship their creator. So what I want to do today, again, I've done this many years. I want to look again at a custom and practice during this message that is very timely. We're going to talk about Halloween, which will be observed here in the U.S. in just a few short days. In fact, it'll be Friday night coming up. It is perhaps the strangest custom of our society. I hate it. I despise it. Of all of man's holidays, to me, it is the most despicable. And many today may not even understand this holiday to have any religious significance at all. For them, it's just something fun for the kiddies. The witches ride with a bounce house and candy and snacks and da-da-da-da-da. But this fun holiday is actually a very veiled, thinly sometimes, veiled practice with much darker roots. I saw a post last night someone sent me where someone said, you've got to watch the trailer to this movie. I love how dark it is. Do you remember the movie The Dark Knight? With the Joker committed suicide, the actor. But someone said, oh, you got to see this Batman movie. It was called The Dark Knight on purpose because he turned dark. I turned it off. The whole thing was messed up. And obviously, Heath Ledger playing Joker was messed up. He killed himself. You may say, oh, it's just a movie, lighten up. No, I'm not going to. Because darkness, who's the Lord of darkness? That's not Jesus Christ or our Father. So I want to analyze this pagan holiday again through from a perspective you may not have given much thought about. And I've talked about this before at various times, so some of it may be repetitive. But let's go back to a time in history familiar to us all. Excuse me. Okay, I'm going to have to just... I know I've talked a lot about it, but it ties in with several very important aspects of our Christian life and our walk with God. Let's go back to the Garden of Eden. Let's go to Genesis chapter 2, and we'll start there. Genesis chapter 2, in verse 15. And for some of you that have been around for any time at all, there was a white-haired gentleman many years ago that every sermon message I heard for years, he talked about what takes place here. Chapter 2, verse 15. And the Lord God took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. I'm going to translate that, to trim the trees and cut the grass. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it, for in the day you eat thereof you are as good as dead. That's the first prophecy in the Word of God. It's talking about what? The two trees. Okay, so now we're going to mix things up a bit, and we're going to now go to the second point, which is what? The treat, the temptation. Genesis chapter 3, verse 1 to 3. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field, which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, Satan's accusing God here, by the way. Yes, has God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And at that point, she should have said, thump, thump with a sandal and dumped him on his head and smashed him. Or run, Forrest, run. For those of you that think it'd be cool to talk to a serpent or a snake, I just went to Alligator Alley, and if one of those alligators had started to talk to me, I would have got gone. That would have been freaky. So, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden. So God said this. Are you sure you heard this right? And the woman said unto the serpent, well, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. But of the fruit of the tree which is in, she explains, in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, or you'll be as good as dead. You're going to die. Okay? Any questions with that, what we just read? Harmless question, right? Human gullibility. And I'm not going to pick on Eve and say it's a woman thing, because that is not true. Human gullibility is shown again. One of our major weaknesses you and I have, especially when we're straying from God or apart from Him, we are honestly very gullible. We just are. And now we go to, we've had the treat. Now we're going to go to the lie. Verse 4, and the serpent said unto the woman, you shall not surely die. And he should have added, physically. If you eat of this, you're not going to asphyxiate and die. So it was partly true, but a damnable lie. So, what happens? You will not die, and what? She then goes on to share a little more. Fact, not only won't you die, God knows. So now he's speaking for God. That's pretty presumptuous and pompous and arrogant and bold. For God does know, you stupid woman, you stupid human, that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes will be opened, and you shall be as gods. At least he didn't say a capital G. Knowing good and evil. So he twisted it. He twisted the truth. And the next point, now we go to the trick. Verse 6. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit, and she ate, and gave, and also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. Okay, what happened there? And the eyes of them both were opened, and they at that point, because they didn't know before, they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. They were husband and wife. They were married. There were no other humans around. Animals don't care, right? So they were naked. Okay. That's not a sin in marriage, in the confines of marriage. It's not. And it was not a big deal, but you see something dramatic took place. They ate the treat. They then suffered the trick, a trick of shame, blame, sin, and sadness. Let me talk about Halloween, because the name comes from the Old English meaning Hallowed Eve. It was also known as All Souls' Eve or All Saints' Day. And the earliest Halloween celebrations in Britain were held by the Druids in honor of, and is the spelling is Samhain. I've heard people say, what in the Samhain are you doing? Well, that's not the proper pronunciation. Irish Gaelic is, it means for summer's end, and the pronunciation is so in with the O-W like a cow, or Samhain. It's not Samhain. It's Samhain. Other pronunciations that follow with many Gaelic dialects include Samhain, Shavin, Samhain, with O like in glow, and the Scots, Scottish, Gaelic spelling is Samhuin or Samhuin, Lord of the Dead, whose festival fell on the 1st of November, which is, if I'm correct, next Sabbath, November 1st. It was a druidical belief that on the eve of this festival of Samhain, Lord of Death called together all the wicked spirits that within the past 12 months had been condemned to inhabit the bodies of animals. It was the night for the universal walking about of all sorts of spirits, fairies, ghosts, and ghouls, all whom had liberty on that night. For the Celts, the Druids, and other tribes of Northern Europe, November 1st was what? The beginning of a new year. And since it was the time when leaves and crops were dying, it seemed the logical time to commemorate the dead. So they created a celebration. We call it in the Spanish sector, celebrando. They love it. To fulfill their desire. If you look at most of the holidays the world follows and celebrates, it's always about desire of some sort to fulfill the flesh. And so the origins, though, are far more widespread than just the Druids and Celts of Britain and Europe. There was a prevailing belief among all nations that at death, the souls, and this is what was addressed back in Genesis, when Satan said, you shall not surely die, is the concept of the immortal soul. But we read right past that. All the souls of good men were taken possession by of good spirits and carried to paradise. But the souls of wicked men were left to wander in the space between the earth and the moon, or consigned to an unseen world. And these wandering spirits were the habit of haunting the living. But there were by means by which these ghosts might be exorcised. So how did you exorcise them? Or to be free of their evil and influence? Well, you had to set out food and provide shelter during the night. If they were satisfied with your offering, they'd leave you alone. In places, sacrifice were offered to these demons or wandering evil spirits in order to satiate their desires. Now, this practice on this same day is found among ancient people in such places as Wales, Britain, northern Central Europe, Cambodia, and Mexico. I have been in houses in Central America, firsthand seen it. You walk in to visit someone, or you're there as someone who's interested in the church. Thankfully, no members, because if they did, that's one of the first things we talk about. But I've walked into their houses, and they have these little holders on the wall. I think you've seen them, which people put food on to feed the evil spirits or to feed the spirits. It's not a joke, and it's not something we can ignore. And I've had people say, I've said, look, there's crumbs, but where's the food? Oh, I get up and watch in the middle of the night. Something comes. I can't see them, but they eat it, and it all goes away. And as long as I keep doing that, it's pretty calm here. Now, I hope the hair's going back up on the back of your neck. But it's still done. And we don't, it's not a joke. Some similar practices, though at different times of the year, can be found in the history of the ancient Greeks and Egyptians. The trick-or-treat tradition came from the idea evil spirits played tricks on the living. So the living began to disguise themselves as goblins or ghosts to escape their evil tricks. Soon, the masquerading evil spirits began playing the tricks instead, threatening people with tricks in exchange for some kind of treat soon followed. And now children dress up and they chant, trick or treat, ding dong, to fill their bags with candy. And what I've heard, because we don't feed them, we don't open the door, we don't welcome them. Oh, that's so mean to these little kids. No, it's not. But we don't. But people said, I've put out apples and bananas and, you know, snack crackers. But if it's not sweet, really expensive candy, they'll just leave it. Or they'll throw it in the yard as they walk away. I remember as a child, a young child, hearing this. Maybe you'll recognize it. Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me something good to eat. Isn't that cute? What about the impact on our children? This is the important question we need to talk about. There are many. I want to spend a fair amount of time on this one because I know we have some parents that will watch this or watching this, or grandparents, or aunts or uncles. Most parents encourage their children in the world today to be part of the Halloween scene. Why, who would want to keep their little child from having fun? The world is so difficult. This is a harmless holiday, as one parent told me. Oh, and as they get older, we can bob for apples. You know, we can be face painting as ghouls and goblins and witches. Oh, it's and a cat, a black cat or a cat. It's so cute. Friends, we live in a horrific society. Gruesome crimes publicized all over the place in gory detail. And letting our children acknowledge and indulge in this sinister side of human nature by acting out evil is healthy? Please help me. What did I miss? Did I miss something? I have been accused of being really, really dense and that I don't notice the obvious of how much fun it is. Okay, there are subtle messages that Halloween sends to young children. play-acting sends a message that a little evil, it's okay. That scaring people is funny. I don't know about you. Some of you are older. But when people scare me purposely, it is not funny. Right? I was riding my bike again. I was hesitant to tell my wife this after my accident last year. Yesterday, I went over to mail a letter. So I went over to the demilitarized dark side zone. And there was a car coming up and pulled alongside me and went like this. Put it in neutral and went, whoa, like that, and laughed. And I was like scared the snot out of me. Well, scared the liver out of me, sorry. Then pulled up alongside me again and went, faked it, didn't do it, on the steering wheel. And I was like, you're sick. Boom! They thought it was funny. I didn't find it funny. It's not funny. And all these customs you see happening, they're rather cute. It's a harmless way of acting out. What real harm could come from them? Consider the learning process of small children. Oh, you're old. You don't know how small children learn. I was told that. I do remember how children learn. And I know. Children operate more on the emotional level than cognitive. Psychiatrists tell us little children are more emotional, more feelings, than cognitive, which is intellectual thinking, rational. In Ross Campbell's book, How to Really Love Our Children, page 31 to 32, you can check it and fact check it. When they get older, if we explain Halloween is just pretend, which is cognitive learning, their psyche already has been imprinted with the subtle message that evil is okay. If I had a diaper, a cloth diaper that was brand new and clean, okay, and there was some defecation on somewhere, and I went over and just touched it like this, okay, and then you could see where it touched it. And then I had a glass of water here. And I took that diaper on another corner, went over and touched the water, and then said, here, it's fine. I didn't touch it. Would you drink from it? I wouldn't. No way. Well, I wouldn't drink if they touched just a regular clean diaper. But, you know, it just a little bit is okay. Any such concern about these things would apply just as much as watching violent or bizarre TV at a young age or playing video games. I worked on an article many years ago on addressing the zombie craze or phase, as one person put it. Oh, it's just movies. It's not real. For younger children, sanctioning of evil on a pretend basis might well send a message that evil is okay. The Joker, the character in the Batman movie, Heath Ledger was documented to suffer emotionally playing the part, only added insult to injury. Are we teaching children to model behavior of things that are of our adversary, the devil? Cults, satanic cults. Childhood customs can imprint the value system in ways we do not perceive. I listened to almost a rant from a teenager, been a couple, 3 years ago. They were so angry that their parents had told them about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. And when they found out they weren't real, they felt like they'd been lied to. You know? And they just went off. And it's like, okay. So, harmful messages, here's what Halloween sends. Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me something good to eat. You give me something or I will, what? Deface your property. Do you remember that 1 year in Milton where they came by and egged our house? They ended up arresting them. And then they had to, we cleaned it off. Boy, that was a mess. It was awful. We cleaned it off before it dried. But it was awful. And they were going by, and what had happened was after they hit my house, they went around the turn and they did a car, and it just happened to be a police officer in the car. But then he came back and I had called 911 to complain. And they arrested him, and he had, like, I think, 2 years of every week having to do public service. And he was told to come apologize to me. I said, he doesn't need to do that. I don't want to interface with him. I don't want him to see what I look like. Lest after he goes back to his normal routine and hasn't learned his lesson, he comes and burns my house down. So I didn't. But it teaches that extortion is okay. Do you know what extortion means? Obtaining goods through abusing others, terrorism of sorts. It teaches that pranks and vandalism are okay. Are these the kind of values we want to impart to a developing child? Halloween does not teach consideration for other people. It does not teach altruistic values. It teaches egotism and self-centeredness. Concern for others is a social skill we have to learn. We need positive customs that teach and reinforce good social skills. People on all sides of social and political spectrum are putting out a call for the teaching of virtues. I have a book here. I've recommended this before. It's quite thick. It's not as thick as War and Peace, but it's thick. If you pick this up and start reading it, you'll have trouble putting it down. It's by William Bennett, and it's The Book of Virtues. This came out a lot of years ago now. 1994 is when I bought it. I would recommend you spending the money on that book, and if you have children, going through it. Let me read the introduction. I think it's... Okay, I'm just going to read part of the introduction. Responsibility, courage, compassion, loyalty, honesty, friendship, persistence, hard work, self-discipline, faith. We all recognize these traits as essentials of good character. In order for our children to develop such traits, we have to offer them examples of good and bad, right and wrong. And the best place to find them is in the great works of literature and exemplary stories from history. In this book of virtues, William J. Bennett has collected hundreds of stories in an instructive and inspiring anthology that will help children understand, develop character, and help adults teach them. From the Bible, stories of Ruth's loyalty to Naomi and Jonathan's friendship from David. For American history, Booker T. Washington earning his way to education, Harriet Tubman, the Underground Railroad, Nathan Hale giving his life for his country, and selections by Martin Luther King Jr., Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, poems from Robert Frost, Emily Dickinson, and Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, fables from Aesop, and stories from Greek mythology, philosophy from Aristotle and Plato, fiction from Willa Cather and O. Henry, fairy tales from the Brothers Grimm and Hans Christian Andersen. These stories are a rich mine of moral literacy, reliable moral preference point that will help, a reference point that will help our anchor our children and ourselves in our culture, our history, and our tradition, the source of the ideals by which we wish to live our lives. It is a book, the Book of Virtues, which the whole family can read and enjoy and learn from together. And I think I'm going to take this from my office and put it on the table henceforth. And I should have done it 25 years ago. At one point it was. We moved too many times and it ended up in my office, which is, that's less weight up there too. So, is the spirit of Halloween a spirit of virtue and wholesomeness? Is it a slice of culture that exalts the weird, demonic, selfish, and self-centered? Philippians 4:8 says, whatsoever things are pure, lovely, of good report, meditate, ponder, muse, think on these things. Let's look at Proverbs 22:6. Proverbs 22:6. We read this a few weeks ago, you may remember. Train up a child in the way that he should go. And I love the way the Jewish 1917 edition puts this. And as he gets older, the Moffat says the same thing, he will not depart from it. Halloween can be physically dangerous to children as well. With all the wackos and the weirdos that are loose in society, that alone, would it be safe to have our kids trick-or-treating? Well, I go with them as a parent. Do you see how modern practices of children dressing up as ghosts, goblins, zombies, monsters, demanding food, follow the tradition of the pagans? It's not from God. Trick-or-treat means give us something or we will damage to you or your property. The devil tree, also known as vandalism, typically conducted on Halloween, is a direct carryover from these original beliefs. Called religious beliefs. The history of the Catholic Church is very clear, particularly with Charlemagne. The church co-opted pagan religious practices in order to add membership in mass. Because, you know, numbers are always important, folks. You got to have big numbers. Why? I'll let you figure that out. Because I do not believe it's ever been about big numbers. And too many people of God still focus on big numbers and being part of something big. Pagan practices were repacked to appear Christian, but the practices didn't change. Thus, Halloween was adapted as a time to remember dead saints known and unknown becoming All Saints Day. Why do we find such universal adherence to these beliefs among different cultures, regions, and ages? The answer to the point, quite simply, is because there is a universal spirit world. One-third of the spirit beings have rebelled against God, and they work tirelessly. If you don't feel it and you don't deal with it as a Christian, then you probably aren't doing what God wants. They're tireless to deceive, discourage, and destroy. Let's look at Revelation 12, verse 9. I may go a little bit longer because we had quite a wait there when the internet we had to get back on, but I apologize, sort of, not too much. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. And he was cast out in the earth, and the angels were cast out with him. We all know that verse. We could quote it. We could never forget, this is not God's world. And Satan's goal is to deceive the whole world. And with the exception of a very few whom God has called, Satan has succeeded. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12. Ephesians chapter 6, please. Verse 12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but we wrestle against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against wicked spirits in high places. So the practices, you know, this is interesting. At Halloween, they all take place at night or when it starts to get dark. Although today the witch's ride is in broad daylight. And who loves darkness more than Satan and his demons? Fire has been a part of Halloween too. In Britain, bonfires, as they call them, are regularly lit and have been for centuries because fire is supposed to frighten away witches and evil spirits. Do you remember what they came after Frankenstein in the movie? I think it was Mary Shelley's, the original one. Going up the hill, they all had these torches with fire because he was scared of fire. Wild animals, if you're ever in a predicament, are scared of fire, generally, unless they're rabid and crazy. Interestingly, fire has been a part of Halloween. A carryover to us today is a carved pumpkin with a candle in it. I noticed how many people have pumpkins this year. There's a lot of them. We don't. I like pumpkins. I may go buy one if they have them still and put them out around Thanksgiving. But I'm not putting them out now. I'm not going to put a smiley face with a marker or carve it out. That used to be a big thing growing up. They still do it. Carve the pumpkin. Right? Scary face was to frighten off evil spirits. Here's an example of how this translates to our modern world, 2025. Do the math. Google it. 99% of the pumpkins marketed domestically are used as jack-o'-lanterns at Halloween. Not for pumpkin pies, Not for fall scenes with, you know, some corn stalks and, no. Jack-o'-lantern. Some of you may say, oh, I know all this. Some of you may say, I've never heard this. I hope so. Jack-o'-lantern comes from an Irish legend. The story tells of a man stuck between heaven and hell, which we don't teach that you go to heaven. When you die, you go to the grave, which is the Greek word Hades or Gehenna, which means hell. But you don't go to an ever-burning hell, and you definitely don't go to heaven. But the story tells of a man stuck between heaven and hell as a result of a bargain with the devil. He was given a single ember to light his way through the cold, dark winter, so he placed the light in a hollowed-out turnip to keep it lit longer. And when the Irish immigrants came to America, they simply traded their tiny turnips for giant pumpkins. Let's go to Luke chapter 22. Please, Luke 22. I would say after we're done today, nobody here is going to go on the witch's ride at 3:15. Luke 22, they weren't going to go anyway, but I got a captive audience. They can't get away. A door's locked. Luke chapter 22. Verse 31, and the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith doesn't fail, and that when you are converted, strengthen the brethren. Notice something interesting. Satan wanted to very greatly destroy the very beginning of the church of God. He wants nothing less today. He started with the leadership, and Peter was a key. And we can assume without much of a stretch that he wanted each of the other apostles just as badly. When that doesn't work, he simply works his way through the church until he finds a weakness and he gets in that way. So we see Paul having to warn the church, what? About elders who had gone awry. And members who had been deceived by Satan and led others away from the church and the truth. And sometimes they're still within it. Marvel not, brethren. For Satan himself transforms his ministry into angels of light. Well, that's an accusation. No, it's just a fact. Whether you like to hear that or not, you need to hear it. Remember, brethren, little has changed. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11. Paul is exhorting the church here. 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11. He says, lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant. Webster's means destitute of knowledge, understanding. We are not ignorant of his devices. Paul's exhorting the church, forgive when offenses occur, the warning being that Satan can get the advantage on us. What's the advantage? He takes away our peace. He causes brothers to be angry and bitter against each other. He causes lying, deception. Well, he takes away the peace in a congregation when there's strife. He takes away peace in a family when there's fighting. And without peace, we are spiritually sidelined, stranded, and vulnerable. We are seeing an increase of that, are we not? Satan's attacking the church, his people, from every angle he can and from very different perspectives. And he never lets up until he destroys and then he laughs. Ha ha, another one. Remember the song? Dun, dun, dun. Another one bites the dust and another one's down and another one's down. Another one bites the dust. Kind of a catchy tune. I can see our adversary humming that as he goes around. He wants to take away peace at the family level, and he's working very hard on our children. We continue to see an increase in demonic activity, and likely we're going to see more. These are real evil spirits. I have interacted with them. It's not fun. Not ghosts and goblins that little kids dress up at Halloween. You probably don't have to worry when you see a little trick-or-treater, whatever they call them, you know. Although, I wouldn't stop and talk to them. If they're out, that means you're not home, and you should probably have been home before they came out. But in Jude, verse 6, the book of Jude, there is no chapter. Jude. In Jude, verse 6 and verse 13. The angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he has reserved in everlasting chains unto darkness, unto the judgment of the great day. Verse 13, raging waves of the sea, foaming out their own shame, wandering stars, stars returning to that, to whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. Why is there so much destruction and vandalism associated with Halloween? Where does the anger come from? Once again, we see this inspired by a demonic realm that knows their fate is inevitable. The weeping and gnashing of teeth Christ foretold comes from a twisted and tormented mind. And I can tell you this, the mind of a demon knows no peace. That's why we see such raw hatred, hideous murders and the like coming from this kind of mind. And you need to hear this. There is no genuine peace in Halloween celebrations. It's not just a night of harmless fun for the kiddies. It's straight from the mind of a fallen angel or a demon. The pagan and heathen tribes of ages gone by were inspired by the mindset to establish it as part of their religious worship. And it has never gone away. It's commercialized with lightly coated candy for the kids, but at its heart, it's a pagan, non-godly, non-biblical religious observance. It is dedicated to worshiping or placating the dead. And God's not dead. God is built, as I said at the onset, and devised man, created within us a desire for a need for religious worship and contact with our Creator. Apart from God, man has devised all these other ceremonies, customs, and manners of worship to fulfill that desire. Nearly every observance of nearly every Christian or Protestant church today is descended from those ceremonies and customs. Look it up. Our God has told us we are to worship Him on which days? And the holy days of God, Leviticus 23 outlines them, and Jesus Christ and the apostles kept them in the New Testament. The holy days of God, they make sense. They have a logical plan and purpose. And we have just returned from keeping His holy days, the Feast of Tabernacles and the last great day. Keep the things in mind that you heard and be thankful to our Father that He has given us the truth. It doesn't make us special, but yet we are special. We're peculiar. Doesn't make us more righteous or better, but He has opened our minds, and praise God for that. It started with man in the Garden of Eden. Do you remember what God said to Adam and Eve? Follow, obey Him, and keep His ways. This is my way. Walk with me in it. He interfaced with them within the garden a lot. Why did He allow the serpent to come in? That's His choice. Because He wanted to see what would happen. So each one of us have a choice. And Eve had a choice and Adam had a choice. Eve was deceived. Adam wasn't. God wanted them and us to follow, obey Him, and keep His ways, and live a happy, like every fairy tale, and they lived happily ever after. Let's make sure we follow God and His truth. And I pray, please don't have anything to do with what's going to take place, the activities throughout this week, this Friday night. Please don't have anything to do with Halloween. It directly compromises and goes against everything our Father and His Son believe, teach, and are and do. Join me in prayer if you would. Our Father in heaven, God, we thank You for the love You have shown us in calling us and pray that this message, as much as it would try to be blocked out, could be heard and the recording came through to be listened to. We love you. We ask for your mind, your protection, your spirit, the power which is so much mightier than any of the fallen spirits, Father. Pray for that protection. Pray for that encouragement. Help us to remain firm, to do what's right in spite of the opposition. It's only going to get harder and harder as time moves forward. So we ask your blessing on the meal. Thank you for it. Help those that were unable to be here, heal them, encourage them. Father, direct us as we now begin the process of procuring a new site for the feast. We leave it in your hands. I'm not fretting. I'm not worried. We've got time. You will provide. You always have. You always will. So again, we love you. We thank you. And we ask this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.